Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I am sure glad that you have joined us here on the program today. It's a special broadcast, and we come your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we also stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com, newspress.com. We are rebroadcast Sundays at 3 p.m. on a2zen.fm, a website that you can go to. We have a link there. You can listen to this program again. Or if you're not able to listen to us on Saturdays, there's another place for you. Or you can go to our archives page. The RichardDugan.com radio shows page is where we put all of these programs. And we encourage you to check out all of our guests and the information that they have to offer. And today is going to be the week has rounded out to be very unusual, probably for most of us. This program that you're listening to right now is one that has taken some interesting twists and turns. We'll share that with you in just a few moments. Just in general, certain events that have taken place, even in my own life, that seem unusual and out of the ordinary. And yet what I found is that they seem to have resolved themselves fairly quickly, which is wonderful. I'm happy about that, and I hope that the same is happening for you. One of the areas we're going to get into today is the subject today is words. The words that we use in our day-to-day lives to converse with other people in all walks of life, in all levels of association, general to very specific and intimate, as well as the words that we use when we talk to ourselves. I kind of made this comment last week about the types of words that we use when we were talking with Daryl Noken and his book having to do with mastering your own self-image and healthy self-image. And so we're going to get into words. Words are important. And one of the things that I have found over the years is that it's important to use the correct words when you're speaking so as to get your point across. But we're going to go a little more deeply into that as we talk with our guest, Edith Nam. She's an 86-year-old author introducing us to 11 winning ways to positively energize one's brain and body. And Edith, I want to welcome you to our program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to share my passion.
Now, you have a book that we'll be talking about and relating folks to or referencing, and that is Change to a Positive Mindset and Extend Your Lifeline. It's a journey to miles of smiles, positive energy, power, hope, health, and happiness. Now, you co-wrote this with Rita Kaufman.
That's true.
And she actually did some of the illustrations in here, if I'm not mistaken.
She did that, and she did the poetry.
And I'm going to start out, because I've had a chance to go through the book, and I'm sort of kind of going to play the devil's advocate, but in a very respectful way, Edith.
Go ahead.
A lot of what I'm reading in your book, mm-hmm. which is wonderful, has been said before in so many other books and workshops and seminars. And some might take it as just a series of platitudes between a cover. How would you address something like that?
I would address it by everything that has energy, positive or negative, is unique. That's why this book is unique. Yes, words are discussed, but not in the same manner that I introduce it, because it's written from the point of view not only of an educator and a counselor, but a specialized handwriting analyst and a thyroid, breast, colon, and liver cancer survivor. And I am emphasizing the role of the specialized handwriting analyst, which makes it extremely unique, because the book presents basic concepts of graphology in a simplified capsule form. because my goal is to make readers and your listeners aware of a simple, accurate, graphic way to get in touch with your feelings every time you put pen to paper. Specifically, what I am talking about is readers and the listeners are learning to see what T-bars show and tell in their handwritten messages, because it does matter how and where you cross your T's. In addition, they are learning how to monitor their level of optimism merely by using the pen as a penometer. That's a phrase or a word that I have coined. That is what is so exciting. That is what makes my book different, unique, and presented from a different point of view.
Now, you used a word, if I'm correct, graphology?
Yes, yes, yes. Graphology is another word of handwriting analysis.
Now, I read a joke somewhere, or maybe it was a comic strip, but the line essentially was, did you ever wonder now if learning cursive writing was really all that important back in grade school because of technology and we're using computers and keyboards and everybody's texting, and yet that's something that you are encouraging?
Yes, yes, yes.
Why? Why in this highfalutin age would you encourage people to return to, or maybe go to for the first time, actual, as you just said, taking pen to paper and writing?
That is an opener that I welcome enthusiastically, because when I became a certified specialized handwriting analyst, I became aware of the tremendously dynamic, dramatic computer that everybody was born with. I'm referring to the brain. And I want people to understand the power of the brain and the relationship of the brain to all your experiences. And the connection is when you are expressing thoughts and ideas and feelings, and you're using handwritten messages to translate that, it is brain writing. You are showing what you're feeling, what the thoughts are, and you have immediate feedback as soon as you finish doing your writing. You cannot accomplish this on a computer because there is no emotional connection. And you may say, well, what is brain writing and how is it related? It's the brain that is contacting the neuromuscular system in the fingers and the hand that is going to record. It's going to record the feelings and the thoughts. And I'll just take a moment to tell you why. Because emotions affect the rhythm of the finger muscle movements. You can't duplicate that on a computer. There are two sets of muscles that control the writing. There's one set that extends the fingers to form upward strokes and righthood movements, and the other set that contracts the fingers to form downward strokes and leftward movements. And when there is a steady rhythmic flow of contraction and extension, you are not filled with stress. However, when you are feeling anger, fear, and anxiety, it disrupts the rhythmic muscle functioning. And so one set that remains taut and tense, it prevents the other set from making rounded, relaxed formations. And so what you are experiencing is a reflection of what it shows, what you're feeling. It's dependent on showing the amount of pressure you're using, the size and shape of the letters change, the slope of the words on the page change, and this changes from moment to moment, which is so dramatic, which is so wonderful, because you have access to avoiding chronic anger, chronic fear, chronic sadness. You're getting rid of it. Yes, I believe that it's important to relieve stress, emotional stress, and I'm referring to anger, fear, sadness, worry, and anxiety. That's getting it out.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, when you are recognizing what your handwritten messages show, you are learning what can you do when you do see evidence of anger, fear, sadness, and know what to do, because it's all in the book telling you how to relieve emotional stress. And many people will say, I make my decisions because I see the handwriting on the wall. Well, I say, base your decisions and your choices based upon the handwriting that you see on paper.
Mm-hmm.
That is what defines it and makes it unique.
Let me throw in, I'm curious as to if it makes a difference whether you use what's referred to as cursive versus block printing. I was in a group once, maybe 20 years ago, and we were asked to journal in this group, and then exchange books, and our partner or in our dyad would read it, and we would just share. This was just, you know, and this was a safe space for all of us, so you didn't have to worry about what you were writing. But I printed because I knew how difficult it would be for the other individual. Or anybody else for that matter. I should have become a doctor because that's how bad my cursive writing was. So I printed, to which the observation was made that I needed to go back to longhand, if you will, because it was as if I was writing like a child. And it was more of a consideration for the reader than it was writing as if I was a child in that context. Is there a difference? Does that really matter? Or is there something really significant about the continuous line as you write cursively?
Well, as I mentioned before, using the two sets of muscles, if you're printing, you're pausing and you're starting to make different letter formations, whereas you want to see the emotional response, you would get that by joining the letters together.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it's over 20 years that I wrote Learning to See What a Child's Handwriting Shows and Tells, and I introduced a simplified form. We are concerned with writing as communication. We are concerned that it should be as legible as possible. There is no right and wrong way. It's a reflection of the feelings that I am concerned about. And when you are disconnecting letter by letter, it interferes with the emotional feelings that can be transferred. Does that make sense?
It does. It actually does. Because when we are, let's say, doing a task, and we're in the flow, we're just moving through it, and time either stands still or flies, what have you. But the next thing you know, you're done with the task, and oh, what a feeling. You know, you just feel so good. Whereas if you get interrupted, hey, could you come over here and help me with this? And then someone else comes, excuse me, could you? And all
That's
of a sudden,
right.
You're working on three and four different things at the same time.
That's right.
Your mind can't really focus. And that's, I think, what you're talking about. The flow is interrupted.
That's right.
Let me before we go any further, I want to let our listeners know, as you've already mentioned, of course, about your ability to survive thyroid, breast, and colon and liver cancer. But also, I want to touch a little bit upon your experiences as an educator of over 25 years. And I'm curious as to your observations of our educational system today, as it compares with what it was when you started.
I noticed the changes while I was a counselor, a guidance counselor in a junior high school, and I emphasize those words because those are the most dynamic transformations that one can experience. It's like kegs of dynamite going from every different direction, and I noticed the changes, and I related to the increased emotional stress that has reached now epidemic proportions. And I say that now after having retired for 20 years. So it has escalated, and my mission is to try and influence parents and teachers and children and the community as to what we can do to eliminate chronic emotional stress, which causes chronic illness. It is tremendous, and the numbers keep doubling and tripling into the millions and billions for what the wars have done, how it has affected the families. It's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. And what my book will help people to understand that they have a source and a guide available to them 24/7 to help eliminate chronic emotional stress.
That's very, very profound in the sense that that's, as you've already well stated, and we've talked about on numerous occasions, is rampant through not just our society here in the United States, but around the world. Some of the documentaries that I'm watching these days dealing with other subjects, as they begin to extend the research into other countries, there's a part of me that questions the sanity mm-hmm. of exporting democracy and free enterprise and the American way of life to other parts of the world. Look what it's done to us.
Yes.
And it's now starting to do the same thing to people in other parts of the world.
That's right. That's why I want my book to go global.
Well, we would hope that that would happen as well. Now, you are, this is only one of, what, six books that you have written over the course of your time?
Yes.
And I'm also curious as to, because you're transcending more than just biology here. More than just psychology,
you're
transcending into more metaphysics and or spirituality, the soul of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about
that. You can call it that. It's reaching into making people aware of, as I said, the brain. And in a few minutes, I'll tell you why I say that. But it's also empowering and adopting and adapting and activating the positive energy power that resides within. And everybody has that. And people should become aware of the fact that they, as a computer, have two programs. Let me just say, I'm simplifying very complex concepts, but just to give you an idea,
mm-hmm.
a fascinating fact about the brain. From the first day to the last day of your life, the brain receives, it organizes, and it distributes all information that you see, that you hear, that you smell, that you taste, that you touch, and that you experience. Your brain is involved in every part of your life. All your thoughts, feelings, and actions that take place every second in your entire lifetime. And all this information, I say, that I have just mentioned, is stored in your memory data bank of your computer, your brain. And I say, visualize this. You have a program that's called the Positive Energy Health Plan. That's what I call PEP. I place that on page one. That houses your feelings of love, of hope, of happiness, and pleasure. On page two is another program in your memory data bank. I call that the negative energy plan. That I call TNT, toxic negative thinking. Those feelings are emotional stress, anger, fear, sadness, and that's pain. And as you are accustomed to going to your computer, you are selecting the program you're going to run. This is the same thing. You have two programs in your computer. You have the option of choosing which program are you going to click into. You know that you cannot operate the two programs at the same time. So you have a choice. And understanding and believing that every day is a new beginning, you, as the programmer, can select which program you're going to click onto. Hmm.
Now, that raises a major question that we have dealt with at this radio station and that I've talked with people about on infinitum for the last 5 years or so.
Okay.
The way that you describe that process implies, correct me if I'm wrong, and I know that you will, we never were designed for multitasking. In spite of the fact that people are trying to do it every day by texting, being on the phone, working on their computer, and maybe even doing the job that they were hired to do or doing the schoolwork that they were supposed to be focused on in the classroom or driving and so forth. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are multitasking is a challenging undertaking. However, I explain that the brain is made up of different lobes, and each lobe has its own responsibility and jobs. For example, there up front and center is your decision-making and your planning. Then there is the motor part. Then there is the visual part, and so on. I say your brain needs to be challenged. It needs to be stimulated, and how you do it, according to my book, is you have three possibilities of stimulating by what you read, what you write, and what you recite, what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach is that it works. It works well. However, if you are assuming multitasking and not aware of which plan you're working on, being on TNT is not going to do it for you, because you've got to be on positive energy power. Mm-hmm. You've got to be on page one to be creative, to look for solutions. Mm-hmm. If you are stuck in a rut on toxic negative thinking, you are not going to succeed. You are going to be doomed to failure because you're working on negative energy, and it takes positive energy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've heard of the study that came out maybe about 3 months ago, the report that said that the level of productivity amongst those who were multitasking severely dropped.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to those. And by the way, we use the phrase around here, Our slogan around this place is that there will be no multitasking, only serial single tasking.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on what you're doing.
Yes.
If you get a phone call, stop what you're doing and take that call or let it go to voicemail and deal with it later.
Yes.
Focus on the task at hand, because 9 times out of 10, when there's a problem, it's human error.
Mm-hmm.
And that human error has been caused because somebody wasn't focused on what they were doing. Their attention was divided.
That's right.
Yeah.
Focus is the key word to success. And when people are on TNT, it is very difficult for them to focus on one thing. Mm. They're impatient, they're irritable, they're angry, they're under stress, and that interferes with productive, healthy performance.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. And Edith, one of the things that Edith has been talking about is near and dear to my heart, especially when it comes to what the term that I use, Edith, is called personal input. And in a little treatise that I'm working on, I talk to people about making a choice, every day you make choices. There isn't a moment in your life where you don't make a choice. The question is, how focused on that choice are you? Now, let's simplify it and say that you have a choice between living and dying. Okay. Now, if you choose to die, I may not like the choice, but I respect and will support you in that choice because it's not mine. It's not my place to say, oh, my God, you must be crazy, you know. But if you and if you choose to live, I will, of course, encourage you and support you in that choice as well. Mm-hmm. But the focus on what you're talking about has to do with matching your personal input to your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that doesn't match, you need to get out of your life, if you will. And unfortunately, sometimes that does mean certain individuals that are not in alignment with. That's not to say that they agree with you. You know, they're not yes people. That's not what we're talking about. But that they go counter to what it is that you're trying to achieve in your life. It's like paddling upstream in the rapids. It's next to impossible. But
yes,
if,
yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because emotional energy is highly, highly contagious, and we don't want to catch or latch on to toxic negative thinking. We want to be on positive energy power, and that is the important thing. I very often say, and I say it's not just facetiously, whether you're north, east, west, or south, seek positive exposure. How can you tell? By the smile the person is wearing. And when people will recommend people to me, even doctors, my first question is, does that person smile? If that is not true, that person is not for me.
Mm.
And I strongly, positively believe in that, because you can't be on TNT and smile. You can only smile as a result of being on PEP and
PEP,
health.
Right. That's kind of what I thought.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's why the theme is recognizing the energy power of words, the energy power of a smile, and the energy power of smile doodling. This is what I am featuring, and words, as you mentioned at the beginning, words are the roots of all your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And what you think affects what you believe, and what you believe affects your attitude, and your attitude influences how you act. So how you act influences your relationship with yourself and with others. Words generate positive or negative emotional energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it takes one word, whether it's positive or it's negative, a fraction of a second to affect your heart rate, your blood pressure, your breathing, and your digestive system. That's the significance and the power of words. And when you combine it to understand the power of a smile and smile doodling, you've got a program that will get you positively energized brain and body.
Let's define a little bit more clearly. What do you mean, and now I forgot the word, doodling?
One of my favorite words.
I forgot the other part to that. You
smile
just,
doodling.
Thank you. Smile doodling. Where am I? I'm not focused, folks. Tell us a little bit more about smile doodling.
My favorite letters are A, O, E, and L. And I start with A and O. For example, if you make a capital O and you make the letter K, you've got the word okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you put two dots and a curve in the letter O, what have you got?
A smiley face.
That's right. So what you're doing is giving your brain the message, I think I'm okay, I believe I'm okay, I am okay. You are giving it positive energy. if you will, and there are many more exercises, but this is one example that you can instantly relieve toxic negative thinking and transfer to THT, thinking happy, healthy thoughts. It's a matter of a fraction of a second that can affect that. For example, to go from TNT to THT, one simple starting point is if you have the words, I cannot change, I have no hope, I can never succeed. Well, if you reduce, and I say try and eliminate, the number of times you say no, not, and never, what do those statements then become? I cannot change becomes I can change. I have no hope becomes I have hope. I can succeed because you've dropped the word never. You, in a fraction of a second, have switched from TNT thinking to TH thinking. And what is even more dramatic, if you were to write on one page the words that contain no, not, never, take some deep breaths, go to another page, and you eliminate it, you will see a marked change in your handwriting reflecting the change of thinking. That is what gets me so enthusiastic and what is so dramatic, because I'm still teaching at Brooklyn College the course, and when I have the participants do this exercise, they invariably say, I can't believe I'm the same person 5 minutes ago who wrote this. That's how dramatic a feedback there is. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I think that you are technically, you're still teaching. You haven't stopped teaching yet.
No.
But I'm noticing, and I'm in the conversations I'm having with many people on this program, is that they are noticing that the young people in this country and around the world, for that matter, and it's not the majority yet, but there is a defined minority, if you will, who are actually craving more. There was a report that came out just this past week that stated that a survey was taken of students, school students,
mm-hmm.
And they were asked basically if they felt that school was easy, too easy, hard, too hard. And they basically, and now I have to say that as a former high school and college student, especially high school, I think it's a big mistake for a student to admit to authority that the curriculum is too easy, because you know what's going to happen. They're going to make it harder. But I think it's interesting that they were willing to be that honest and say, hey, we're really not learning anything in here. Nothing's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
But there are kids who are craving the knowledge, not the indoctrination, not the propaganda, not the I'm going to tell you what to think,
mm-hmm.
but the I'm going to show you how you can think. I'm going to show you the process of logical thought, problem solving, and so forth. Because I'm sure that when you were in school, and even in your early days of teaching, I think that was the sort of the beginnings of the memory rote, or what is it, teach to the test, they call it now?
Oh, I hope they don't refer to it. I don't like it. But, yeah, because teaching to the test is not learning.
No. And rote memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's another phrase that's used. And I know that was a lot of, I don't recall a lot of practical educational information as I was growing up. The only time that I felt it was practical, that it was really meaningful, was when I began to apply it to certain things that I was doing, or I began to, like with algebra, I loved algebra in high school, so much so that I was 5 or 6 or 7 chapters ahead in the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course, my instructor, seeing that I was turning in the homework and everything, said, well, as long as you keep up with the homework, you don't need to come to class. That was a big mistake. I needed to continue because, unfortunately, I didn't. And that's sort of human nature. I needed that structure.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that structure. Tell us a little more about this process of learning, the learning process. Can you enlighten us on what you see it is today as opposed to what you feel it ought to be in terms of people really coming out of school with an education that they can really use?
It's nowadays, the opportunities and the options are infinite in comparison to what had existed before because of the internet. When you are curious, when you have found something that you're interested in, that you like, that you love, that you want to pursue, there's no limit to where you can satisfy it. It doesn't remain in the classroom. Yes, it can give you a place of focus that you must complete the process of going through diplomas and so on, but you're not limited. Mm-hmm. If you feel that you are interested in something, all you can do is have access with the flow of your fingers as to what you're clicking on the internet. It's a matter of being interested, finding something that fills and satisfies your unique needs that will also build your strengths, your abilities, your talents, so that you're pursuing something that you become passionate about, which I am very grateful for that I have had all my life. Mm. However, if you are under emotional stress, it interferes with your ability to learn and to listen. It affects your ability to optimally function. And we want to explore what the opportunities and the choices are. We want to discover what is within us that can be passionately explored. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, because we use the phrase giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And if you don't know that there's a fork in the road up ahead because the fog is so thick that you're told stay to the right, stay to the right, stay to the right. And that's what a lot of people think that the current educational system, and I talk about the system, not the internet, but the system, that's all they're doing is they're teaching everybody to stay to the right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are informed, you're given information. Did you know that there's the possibility that there might be a fork in the road up ahead? And that if you can just make some adjustments in your path just a little bit, you don't have to get so uncomfortable, but challenge yourself a little.
That's right.
You might find that there's a fork that goes off to the left, and who knows what's down that road?
That's right. You know, I smile when you say the fork in the road because a favorite saying that was it Yogi Bear that said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Yes, yes, yes.
And what I say is, it matters to you what is on your mind. How do you make the choices? I say it depends on what makes you smile. It depends on the choices that are available, and there is either positive or negative. What makes you smile? What makes you respond to? It's a matter of direction by what are you going to do? T-O to get the direction, or are you going to start going to T-W-O, page 2, or are you going to stay on TNT, which is T-O-O? One word. Same sound, different meanings.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how you spend your time, the direction. Are you going up or you're going down? Are you making something that will raise your feelings of joy and optimism, or is it dooming you to failure?
Was there were there any particular events in your education, and I'm not speaking now of you as the educator, but as the student going through the process, where you felt that you weren't getting this, that there was something missing and that you wanted more, and so you had to find other outlets to get it?
In a way, yes. I will say, though, that I have always felt that I wanted to teach. I have always felt that education was an important thing for me. I think it started in high school. I loved my high school. I felt so energized. And I particularly found my passion in, because of the love for words and fun with words, to be an English teacher. That is where I was destined to explore, because I majored in at Brooklyn College in education and preparing to be an English teacher. And that's where I felt I was dedicated to doing, which is what I am so happy that I am at back at Brooklyn College doing it my way, the right way, to positively energize. Recognizing the energy, anytime I'm in an educational building, I'm alive because I have that kind of a passion and emotional response.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yes.
I have to say that is something that we all aspire to. I myself am very fortunate in the position that I find myself in these days, being able to do these programs, talk with people like you, get this kind of information out, saying, hey, because I was gonna also respectfully play the devil's advocate and say, you know, Edith, you know, this is all fine, well, and good, but all I have to do is pick up the newspaper, turn on the news, or go outside and look around. It ain't a pretty place right now. I mean, it's really pretty dank and dreary as far as not only the mood of a lot of people. I mean, you know, we have all kinds of conditions going on around us that we hear about daily, if not hourly. How in the world can you be optimistic about the future of our humanity?
Because you have to constantly hang on to hope. But you must realize that you cannot control anything. You can't control anything but your own thoughts, your own beliefs, and what you want to achieve. It's TBA, texting my way. What you think, what you believe, you achieve. Mm. When you realize that you can change your thoughts, you can change what you believe, and you can change your reaction to people, places, and events. That puts you into the possibility of, what can I do to help myself so that I am not falling into TNT? You can't change the world. You can change yourself, and you can hope that there is a possibility of sharing what you have learned and what is so positive to others, and therefore change it. When you realize that there is so much stress in this world, yes, you want to keep up with the events, but how many times do you have to subject yourself to all the strife and stress that's going on in the world? Mm. Certainly not before you go to sleep. Because what happens is you're going to be running that self-talk tape that you referred to during your sleep. That's going to interfere with your ability to have pleasant dreams. So there's a timing. And it's important, as I said, to recognize that taking on anybody else's stress is not going to increase your positive energy power.
Edith Nam, I have a question for you that you have certainly addressed throughout this program thus far. However, I ask this question regardless because I'd like the answer to come from this particular point, and that is, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing?
What is it that I want to achieve? I want to try and present to readers and listeners, sharing the strategies that I believe can free their mind from fear and empower them to feel self-confident and to increase their smile mileage regardless of their age, their gender, or their economic background. Because now with the recognition of how powerful the brain is and the neuroscience departments working feverishly on determining the activity of the brain. There is plasticity of the brain. The more you stimulate the brain until the last day of life, you are building connections. There are connections that are growing as a result of the brain being stimulated. And my hope is that people will begin to realize it's never, never, never too late to learn, to listen, and to have laughter, because those three things will increase the stimulation and will increase your positive energy power. And so there is always hope that it will come, and have patience. But again, it's not that you're changing the world, you're changing yourself so that you're not falling into the TNT category. Mm. Does that make sense?
It does indeed. And as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, as I stumbled through that just a little bit, I'm here with Edith Nam, and we are very excited to have you, and especially from the standpoint of having been through the educational system that I went through, Edith, it's encouraging to talk with someone who has been involved in this whole process. Tell me about your early years, especially from, if I may, from a spiritual standpoint.
I relate the spiritual aspect to the positive energy, what you believe in. Regardless of what form it takes, it is the ability to comfort yourself, to provide satisfaction, to provide achievement, to relieve yourself from stress. So it's really connected, whatever it is that will add comfort. Of course, I have four favorite phrases, and I say, write more and stress less. Write more and weigh less. Write more and see and sleep better. And write to see what you think. And whatever form, whether people are involved in religious aspects or spiritual, whatever works, whatever you feel provides the comfort that you're seeking. That is what is important. That is what is so unique. It has to be meaningful for you, to interest you, and to spur you on. Does that make sense?
It does. Now, I want to give you a little insight that I received when I was in school, and I'm talking about I went to grade school and high school. I skipped junior high. They had 1 through 8 and then 9 through 12 where I went. And I remember being told, and I can't remember if this was a part of the biology class, because what they were doing was trying to explain to us the differences between boys and girls, not as far as sex education was concerned, but more just in terms of this is the way that we are. And they told us that boys are different from girls. They learn differently. I mean, this was the conversation, that they learn differently. They have difficulty sitting still because they have so much energy inside. This is just the natural state. And we're now talking about mid to late 60s into the 70s, which is when I went to school. And I thought, okay, well, that makes sense, because I'll be the first to admit I have a little difficulty sitting still. You know, I'd rather be outside than the swings or what have you. And then I began to see in the early 80s the introduction of Ritalin. And they were trying to normalize children because they thought that they were hyperactive, that they had some dis-ease, ADD or ADD or DAD or whatever letters you want to put to it. And I thought, wait a minute, but you told me 10 years ago that we were all different. So why are you trying to normalize us? Now, fortunately, I escaped that. I managed to graduate from high school before they started doing that. But it was shortly after I graduated that they started diagnosing kids with this condition. Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody's been diagnosed with it, I'm not here to argue whether you have or have not. All I'm saying is it seems rather coincidental, and I use the term coincidental. Coincidental.
I like that.
That this has happened. It's like, wait a minute, we're each unique individuals, just as individuals are concerned, and forget about the gender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when you start looking at the gender, we're different.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yet the system, the institution, and it's not just education, it's religion too, mm-hmm. is trying to normalize us.
Well, I take exception to the word normalize. What does that really mean? If you're talking about everybody being unique, then there is no such thing as normalizing. It depends on each individual. Yes, there are the differences. There's hormonal differences. The males are subject to higher degrees and levels of testosterone. You have the females who are far more hormonally charged because of their development and mm-hmm. the nature of them. It's a matter of moderation and balance and consistency for each unique person. That is what will establish what determines when it goes to extremes, too much or too little. That depends on each person, and it's not just related to the hormones. It's taking into consideration what is changing the balance and that's creating a problem. There is the diet, the food, because that's the chemical energy mm-hmm. on which we function. That affects every cell in one's body. And that, in combination with where the person is at hormonally, determines what their problems are.
Mm. And go ahead.
And if you can establish moderation and balance and consistency in everything that you do, I'm talking about your choices of food as well as the other essentials that are involved, that's what will determine what is right for a person. And I feel that this has to be explored completely, comprehensively, before you're giving the Ritalin and the drugs. It's coming from the outside, I believe. Explore what's going on inside and what will determine the need to maintain a balance of everything. If you're under stress, you are stressing out the stress hormones, the sympathetic nervous system that goes into operation that is only supposed to exist for short-term emergencies. We want to be on PEP, which operates on the parasympathetic nervous system, which improves on the endorphins, the feeling-good hormones. That will establish balance, moderation, and consistency. That MBC, moderation, balance, and consistency, does not exist if you're on TNT. That's when everything is overworked. Overworked, and it affects your immune system. It affects your digestive system. It creates chronic illness. You see, it's all involved. And you can't take one aspect and think you're solving the problem unless you understand what is happening as a result of prolonged stress on the body systems. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It sounds to me, too, and I listen to business leaders, uh-huh. CEOs and so forth, management uh-huh. administration. I listen to politicians. Uh-huh. I listen to the religious. And there's one element that seems to be missing almost across the board. I don't want to use a broad brushstroke here, but it seems as though logical problem solving has somehow been eliminated from their educational process.
Yes.
So that when we hear them speak about a problem and how to solve it, it doesn't make any sense.
You're so right. You are so right, because they're functioning on TNT, if you don't mind my saying it. They're looking to seek blame. They're looking not for solutions. They're getting sidetracked. They're getting distracted. And they're pointing fingers instead of trying to solve problems. And it's basically operating on anger. They're basing on anger. In my book, I have a page that says, anger in action from A to Z. And if one looks at it, one will get an example of all that's taking place when you listen to many, many people. And there are no solutions because they're operating on TNT. Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I noticed that as we converse here and so forth, you're very astute at asking me and our listeners, too, if that makes sense. And I find that that doesn't happen a lot, that they throw the information out there and say, this is the information. Mm-hmm. Don't question it. And yet the old phrase from the 60s is, you know, always question authority. And it seems that sort of is coming back in a big way. I mean, I'm meeting a lot of young people. And when I say young, teenagers and 20 folks in their 20s, who, it's not so much that they're questioning authority as much as it is that they're thinking for themselves. Mm-hmm. They're problem solving. Even they see that certain things just don't make sense. Yeah. Doesn't matter who's speaking and from which side of the aisle. It just doesn't make sense.
That's right. And it has to make sense to you in order to be able to accept it. And if you are thinking it in relation to yourself, is it going to help you function optimally? That is the basis for choices and for listening. I have reached the point, I start hearing some of the words that are spoken, forget it. I don't want to listen to it. I don't have to be subjected to it. It's not helping me. It's not helping me to achieve the level of positive energy that I seek.
Well, Edith, I first of all, I commend you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
I think that what you are bringing to the forefront and have been working on for, you know, the last 25, 30 years or more, I think is desperately, desperately needed, ladies and gentlemen, in order for us to move forward as a civilization. Put aside what a lot of people refer to as petty differences, a left of the wing, a right of the wing, mm-hmm. you know, religious affiliations. We're human beings and we have to survive here, and we've got to find ways, new ways of facing the old challenges, as some of our guests are telling us, that we can't keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
That's I believe right. They refer to that as insanity, do they not?
yes. And that's not on the PEP health list. You see, when you recognize that everything is unique, you recognize, too, that changes take place every second, not only within you, but externally. And if there are dynamic changes, nothing can be the same. And that should be something that we establish as a rule. If it's unique, it's not going to happen again. That prevents you from getting into the anxiety stage. What if it happens again? It can't happen again. I don't say that you can eliminate catastrophes. It's not going to happen in the same way. So why spend your time anticipating pain about the future? Don't think that you can repeat history. You can't repeat history, because anything that has passed 1 second from now cannot be changed. Therefore, do not spend your time trying to go back to what was. It is frustration, it is anger, and it is giving you guilt. It's self-destructive. The time to spend is on now. What can you do this moment to make change? So understanding the word, the full word of unique, that it can't happen, can eliminate your concern about what was and what will be.
One final question before we wrap up.
Sure.
Who is Edith Nam?
Who is Edith Nam? She is one who is dedicated to change the world one smile at a time, to offer what is possible to achieve, which is learning to live to live a healthy lifestyle that can positively empower one to survive and thrive in a 24/7 world. And Edith Nam is available 24/7 to try and explain, encourage, and empower anyone who is interested in listening and learning.
And E Nam, E N as in Nancy, A-M-M as in Mary.com is the website you can go to. And we will be linked to her as well. And Edith, again, I thank you so much for joining us on the program here on Tell Me Your Story. It's been great having you on the program.
Thank you so much for allowing me to express what I am so passionate about.
Please hold on to that passion, and I hope that many more people will pick it up and run with it as well and make it their own.
Thank you. Yes, yes, yes. They got to keep smiling.
Keep smiling. I'm Richard Dugan, and this has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this time, love to all.